a Fifth Avenue theater in downtown Seattle. It had been one of her father's rare indulgences. "Oh," Angie said, feeling the air go out of her lungs. "I was going to just let the date go past. I missed the producers in July." Mama sighed, her shoulders caved downward. "But Papa thinks you and I should go." Angie closed her eyes for a moment, seeing her father, dressed in his best black suit, heading for the door. He'd adored musicals most of all, had always come home from them singing. West Side Story had been his favorite, of course. Tony and Maria. "That's your mama and me," he always said. "Except we love each other forever, eh, Maria?" She slowly opened her eyes, saw the same play of bittersweet memories on her mother's face. "It's a good idea," Angie said, pulling Mama into the warmth of the cottage. "We'll make a night of it. Dinner at Palisades and a room at the Fairmont Olympic. It'll be good for us." "Thank you," Mama said, her voice cracking. "That is what your papa said." The next morning, Lauren got up early and made herself breakfast. But when she stared down at the eggs on her plate, the thought of eating that runny pile of yellow goo was more than she could bear. She pushed the plate away so fast the fork fell off and clanged on the formica table. For a second there, she thought she was going to throw up. "What's wrong with you?" Startled, she looked up. Mom stood in the doorway, dressed in an obnoxiously short pink denim skirt and an old Metallica t-shirt. The black circles under her eyes were the size of Samsonites. She was smoking a cigarette. "Gee, Mom, it's nice to see you again. I thought you'd died in your bedroom." "Where is Prince Charming?" Mom leaned against the doorway. There was a dreamy, self-satisfied smile on her face. "This one is different." Lauren wanted to say, "as in different species?" But she held back. She was in a crappy, irritable mood. It wouldn't do any good to tangle with her mother. "You always say that. Jerry Ekstrand was different, all right. And that guy who drove the VW bus, what was his name? Dirk? He was definitely different." "You're being a bitch." Mom took a long drag on her cigarette. As she exhaled, she nibbled on her thumbnail. "Are you having your period?" "No, but we're behind in the rent again, and you seem to have retired."
"Not that it's any of your business, but I might be falling in love."
"The last time you said that, his name was Snake. God knows, you can never go wrong with a guy named after a reptile. You pretty much know what you're getting."
"There is definitely something wrong with you."
Mom crossed the room and sat down on the sofa. She put her feet up on the coffee table.
"I really think this guy might be the one, Lo. I remember the night I first saw him."
Lauren thought she heard a crack in her mother's voice, but that wasn't possible. Men had always drifted in and out of her mother's life. She'd fallen in love with dozens of them, and fallen out of love just as fast.
"I was having drinks with Phoebe, and just getting ready to leave, when Jake walked in."
Mom sucked in a long drag on her cigarette, exhaled.
"He looked like a gunfighter, coming into the bar for a fight. Then the light hit his face, and I thought for a second it was Brad Pitt."
She laughed. "The next morning, of course, when I woke up with him, he didn't look much like a movie star.
But he kissed me. In the light of day. A kiss."
Lauren felt the tiniest of openings between them. Such a moment was rare, and she couldn't help moving toward it. She sat down beside her mom.
"You sound different when you say his name."
For once, Mom didn't ease away.
"I didn't think it would happen for me."
She seemed to realize what she'd said, what she'd revealed, so she laughed and lit up another cigarette.
"I'm sure it's nothing."
"I guess I could say hi to him."
"Yeah, he thinks you're a figment of my imagination."
Mom laughed.
"Like I would pretend to have a kid." Lauren couldn't believe she'd walked into it again, or that it still hurt. She started to get up, but her mother stopped her, actually touched her. And the sex, holy shit, it's good. She took another drag, exhaled, smiling dreamily. Smoke swirled around Lauren's face, clogged her nostrils. She gagged at the smell and felt her stomach rise. She ran for the bathroom, where she threw up. Afterward, still shaky, she brushed her teeth and went back to the dining room table. "How many times do I have to ask you not to exhale your smoke in my face?" Mom stabbed out the cigarette in the overloaded ashtray and stared at Lauren.
"Puking is a new response."
Lauren grabbed her plate from the table and headed for the sink. "I gotta go. David and I are studying together tonight."
"Who's David?"
Lauren rolled her eyes. "Nice. I've been dating him for almost 4 years."
"Oh, him. The good-looking one."
Mom gazed at her through the still lingering smoke and then took another drink of her Coke. For once, Lauren felt as if her mother were actually seeing her.
"You have a lot going for you, Lauren. Trust me when I tell you that a hard dick can ruin everything."
"I think Mrs. Brady said the same thing to Marcia." Mom didn't laugh. Neither did she look away. It was a long moment before she said softly,
"You know what makes a girl throw up for no reason, don't you?"
"I can't believe I let you talk me into this dress," Angie said, studying herself in the mirror in their hotel room.
"I didn't talk you into it," Mama said from the bathroom. "I bought it for you."
Angie turned sideways, noticed how the red silk clung to her body. The dress Mama had chosen from the sale rack at Nordstrom was one Angie never would have bought for herself. Red was such a look-at-me color. Even more than that was the pure sexiness of the dress. Angie usually preferred classic elegance. Normally, she would have refused to wear it, but she and her mother had had such a wonderful day. Lunch at the Georgian Room, facials at Jean Juarez's downtown spa, and shopping at Nordstrom. When Mama had seen this dress, she'd screamed and made a beeline. At first, Angie had thought it was just a joke. The dress was a scarlet halter style with a plunging back. Thousands of tiny silver bugle beads glittered along the bodice, and even at 70% off, the price tag was hefty.
"You've got to be kidding," she said to her mother, shaking her head. "We're going to the theater, not to the Oscar ceremony." "You are a single woman now," Mama said, and though she was smiling, there was a sad knowing in her eyes.
"Life changes," that look said, "whether you want it to or not."
"Mr. Hoffman at the hardware store said Tommy Matucci was asking about you."
Angie decided to let that pass. Hooking up with her high school boyfriend was not at the top of her to-do list.
"So you think if I dress like an expensive hooker or a Hollywood celebrity, which is pretty much the same thing, I'll find my way to a new life?"
Angie meant to sound flip, but when she got to the words "new life," her smile shook.
"What I think," Mama said slowly, "is that it's time to look forward instead of back. You're doing a great job with the restaurant. Date night is a huge success. You've collected enough coats for most of the elementary school. For now, be happy."
Angie knew it was good advice. "I love you, Mama. Have I told you that recently?"
"Not enough. Now let's go. Your father says we are late."
They made it to the theater in less than 15 minutes. They passed through the doors, showed their tickets, and stepped into the crowded but beautiful lobby.
"He loved it here," Mama said, her voice thready. "He always bought one of those expensive programs, and he never threw them away. I still have a huge stack of them in the closet."
Angie put an arm around her mother, held her tightly.
"Maybe we should leave."
"No!
I like feeling him here. He would have led us right to the bar."
"And so we'll follow him."
Angie led the way to the small area where cocktails were served. Elbowing her way through the crowd, she ordered 2 white wines. Glasses in hand, she and Mama sipped the wines and walked around the lobby, appreciating the gilded Baroque decor. At 7:50, the lights flickered. They hurried to their seats in the 4th row and sat down. The theater was filled with hushed noise, footsteps, whispered voices, people moving in the orchestra pit. Then the show began. For the next hour, the audience sat enthralled as the sad and beautiful story unfurled. At intermission, when the house lights came up, Angie turned to her mother. "What do you think?" Mama was crying. Angie understood. The music did that to you. It released your deepest emotions.
"He would have loved this one," Mama said. "I would have grown weary of the soundtrack."
Angie touched her mother's velvety soft hand. "You'll tell him all about it." Mama turned to her. The old-fashioned glasses magnified her dark, teary eyes.
"He won't talk to me so much anymore. He says, 'It's time, Maria.' I don't know what I'll do all alone."
Now Angie knew about that kind of loneliness. It hurt, sometimes more than you could bear, but there was no way to avoid it. You simply kept moving until it passed. "You'll never be alone, Mama. You have children and grandchildren and friends and family. It's not the same."
"No."
Mama's mouth creased sadly downward. They sat there, silent and remembering, until Mama said,
"Would you get me something to drink?"
"Sure." Angie sidled down the row of seats and merged into the crowd. At the door, she paused for a moment and looked back. Mama was the only person left in the 3rd row. She looked small from here, a little hunched. And she was talking to Papa. Angie hurried across the lobby toward the bar. There were dozens of people clustered there. That was when she saw him. She drew in a deep breath and exhaled slowly.
He looked good.
Take your breath away and make your heart ache good. But then, he'd always been the most handsome man she'd ever seen. She remembered the first time she'd ever seen him, all those years ago on Huntington Beach. She'd been trying to learn to surf and doing a terrible job of it. A huge wave had tumbled over her, sucked her under, and turned her around. She'd panicked and flailed, unable to tell which way was up. Then a hand had grabbed her by the wrist and pulled her to the surface. When she'd opened her eyes, she'd found herself looking into the bluest pair of eyes she'd ever seen.
"Conlon."
She said his name quietly, as if maybe he wasn't really there and she was imagining him. She moved toward him. He saw her. They stared at each other, started to come together for a hug, and then backed off. They were like toys stuck in the pause mode, struggling to move.
"It's good to see you," he said.
"It's good to see you."
An awkward pause settled between them, and suddenly Angie wished she'd never walked over here, never said hello.
"How are you doing? Still in West End?"
"Good. It seems I have a knack for the restaurant biz. Who knew?"
"Your dad," he said, reminding her with those 2 words how much he knew about her.
"Yeah."
"Well, how's the news?"
"Good.
I'm writing a series on the freeway killer. Maybe you've read them?"
She wished she could say yes. Once she'd been his first reader on everything. "I kind of stick with local news these days."
"Oh."
Her heart was swelling now, starting to ache. It was beginning to hurt just standing so near him. She ought to leave, while her dignity was intact. Instead, she found herself asking, "Are you by yourself?"
"No."
She nodded. It was more a jerking tilt of the chin. "Of course not. Well, I better..." She turned to go.
"Wait."
He grabbed her wrist. She stopped, looked down at his strong, tanned fingers, so stark against her pale wrist.
How are you? He asked, moving closer to her. Really?
She could smell his aftershave. It was the expensive Dolce & Gabbana brand she'd bought him for Christmas last year. She looked up at him, noticed a tiny patch of black on his jaw where he'd missed shaving. He'd always had that problem. He did everything in such a hurry. Angie had had to inspect his shave every morning. She wanted to reach up and touch his face, let her fingertip trail along his jaw. I'm okay. Better than that, really. I like being in West End again.
You always said you'd never go home.
I said a lot of things.
And I didn't say a lot of things.
She saw the change that came over his face. A terrible sorrow seemed to pull at his mouth.
Don't, Ange.
I miss you. She couldn't believe she'd said it. Before he could respond, or not, she forced a smile. I've been hanging out with my sisters and being Auntie Angela again. It's fun. He laughed, obviously relieved by the change of subject.
Let me guess. You've promised Jason to convince Mira that an eyebrow ring is okay.
For a second, it was like the old days between them. The good old days.
Very funny. I would never think an eyebrow ring is okay.
Although he has mentioned a tattoo.
Conlon?
Angie saw the blonde, 30-something woman who'd come up to Conlon. She wore a plain navy dress and a strand of pearls. Not a hair was out of place. Diamonds frosted her slender throat. She looked like the owner of a small, exclusive boutique.
Angie, this is Laura.
Laura?
Angie. Angie forced a smile. It was probably absurdly overbright, but there was nothing she could do about that.
It's nice to meet you. Well, I'd better run. She started to rush away. Conlon pulled her gently toward him.
I'm sorry, he said quietly.
For what? She made herself laugh.
Call me sometime.
She held on to a smile by force of will. Sure, Conlon. I'd love to run into you again. Bye!
Chapter 15.
The worst part about it was that she'd almost forgotten. At least she believed she had, and in the end, that was pretty much the same thing. Denial was Mira's one-word answer to Angie's long, drawn-out explanation of how she'd handled her emotions after the divorce. It was, she thought, as good an observation as any. In the months between May and November, she'd allowed herself to think about several of her losses, particularly her father's death and the loss of her daughter, and the subsequent realization that there would be no babies. In fact, she was proud of the way she'd handled her grief. Every now and then it had shocked her, pulled her under its icy surface, but in each instance she'd swum free. The divorce, somehow, had been pushed aside, a little thing in the presence of giants. Now she saw the whole of it, and she couldn't look away.
There's nothing wrong with denial, she said to Mira, who stood at the stainless steel counter making pasta.
Maybe not, but it can fill up and explode one day. That's how people find themselves in McDonald's with a loaded handgun.
Are you suggesting there's a felony in my future?
I'm pointing out that you can only ignore your feelings for so long.
And I've reached the end of my time, huh?
Conlon was one of the good ones, Mira said gently.
Angie went to the window, stared out at the busy street. I think was is the key word in that sentence.
Some women choose to go after men they've accidentally let go.
You make Conlon sound like a dog that broke its leash and ran. Should I put reward posters around Volunteer Park?
Mira came around the counter and stood beside Angie, put a hand on her shoulder. Together they stared out the window. In the silvery pane, backed by night, they became a pair of watery faces.
I remember when you met Conlon.
Enough, Angie said. She couldn't go down memory lane right now.
I'm just saying I know what you're saying.
Do you?
Of course.
She gave her sister a tender smile, hoping it wasn't as sad as it felt.
Some things end, Mira. Love shouldn't be one of those things.
Angie wished she could be that naive again, but innocence was one of the casualties of divorce. Maybe the first one.
I know, she answered, leaning against her sister. She didn't say what they both knew, that it happened every day.
Lauren got off the bus on Shorewood Street. There it was, in front of her, a bright, sprawling Safeway.
You know it makes a girl throw up for no reason, don't you?
She flipped the hood of her sweatshirt up and tried to lose herself in the soft, cottony folds. Looking down to avoid eye contact with anyone, she marched into the store, snagged a red basket, and headed straight for the feminine needs aisle. She didn't bother pricing the tests. Instead, she grabbed two boxes and tossed them in her basket, then ran to the magazine aisle, where she yanked a U.S. News and World Reports out of the stack. The cover story was, How Colleges Compare.
Perfect.
She tossed it on top of her pregnancy tests and made a beeline for the checkout. An hour later, she was home again, sitting on the edge of the bathtub. She'd locked the door, but there had been no need. The sounds that came from her mother's bedroom were unmistakable. Mom wouldn't be bothering Lauren right now. She stared down at the box. The fine print was hard to read. Her hands were trembling as she opened the box.
Please, God.
She didn't voice the rest of her plea. If he was up there, he knew what she wanted. Or, more precisely, what she most fervently did not want. Angie stood at the hostess desk, making notes on the calendar. For the last 24 hours, she'd worked from sunup to sundown. Anything was better than thinking about Conlon. She looked up and saw Lauren standing by the fireplace, staring into the flames. The restaurant was full of customers, and yet there Lauren stood, doing nothing. Angie went to her, touched the girl's shoulder. Lauren turned, looking dazed.
What? Did you say something?
Are you okay?
Fine. I just needed something for table 7.
She frowned as if she couldn't remember what she'd just said. Zabaglione.
Huh?
Table 7. Dr. and Mrs. Rex Mayberry. They're waiting for Zabaglione and cappuccino. And Bonnie Schmidt ordered a tiramisu.
Lauren's smile was a pathetic facsimile of the real thing. Her dark eyes remained dull, sad even.
That's right.
She headed for the kitchen.
Wait, Angie said, following her. Lauren paused, looked back.
Mama made some extra panna cotta. You know how quickly it goes bad. Stay a few minutes after work and have some with me.
I hardly need to eat fattening foods, Lauren said, and walked away.
For the next few hours, Angie watched Lauren closely, noticing the paleness of her skin, the woodenness of her smile. Several times she tried to make Lauren laugh, all to no avail. Something was definitely wrong. Maybe it was David. Or maybe she'd been rejected by a college. By the time Angie had ushered out the final guest, said goodbye to Mama, Mira, and Rosa, and closed out the register, she was really worried.
Lauren stood at the big picture window, staring out at the night, her arms crossed tightly against her chest. Across the street, volunteers were busily hanging turkeys and pilgrim hats from the street lamps. Next, Angie knew, they'd string thousands of Christmas lights for the celebration that followed Thanksgiving. The annual tree lighting ceremony was an event to be remembered. Hundreds of tourists came to town for it. The first Saturday in December, Angie had rarely missed it, not even during her married years. Some family traditions were inviolable. Angie came up behind Lauren.
It's only a week until the first lighting celebration.
Yeah.
She could see Lauren's face in the window. The reflection was pale and watery.
Do you guys go to the ceremony every year?
You guys?
Lauren uncrossed her arms. You and your mom.
Lauren made a sound that might have been a laugh.
Mommy, dearest, isn't one to stand in line on a cold night to watch lights turn on.
A grown-up's words, Angie realized. the explanation given to a child who longed to see the Christmas lights come on. Angie wanted to place a hand on the girl's shoulder, to let her know that she wasn't as alone as she obviously felt, but such an intimacy felt unwelcome right now.
Maybe you'd like to come with me. I should say, us. The Desarias descend on the town like locusts. We eat hot dogs and sip hot cocoa and buy roasted chestnuts from the Rotary booth. It's hokey, I know, but no thanks.
Angie heard a defensive edge in the girl's voice. Beneath that, she heard heartache. She could also tell that Lauren was ready to bolt into the night, so she chose her words carefully. What's wrong, honey? At the word honey, Lauren seemed to shrink. She made a sound and spun away from the window. Grabbing her backpack off the floor, she ran for the door. See ya! Lauren Ribido, you stop right there! Angie surprised herself. She hadn't known she had the mom voice in her. Lauren dropped her backpack and slowly turned to face Angie. What do you want from me? Angie heard a well of pain in the girl's voice. She recognized every nuance of that sound. I care about you, Lauren. Obviously, you're upset. I'd like to help. Lauren looked stricken. Don't, please.
Don't what?
Be nice to me. I really can't take it tonight. It was the sort of thing Angie understood, that kind of fragility. She hated that someone so young should be in such pain, but then again, what was adolescence if not acute confusion and overwhelming emotions? The whole thing was probably over a bad test score, unless...
Did you and David break up?
Lauren almost smiled. Thanks for reminding me it could be worse. Put your coat on.
Am I going somewhere?
You are. Angie took a chance. She headed back to the kitchen for her coat. When she returned, Lauren was standing by the door, wearing her new green coat.
Come on, Angie said.
They walked side by side down the dark street. Every few feet, an ornate iron street lamp tossed light down on them. Normally, at 10:30 on a weeknight, these streets would be deserted, but tonight there were people everywhere, readying downtown for the holiday festivities. The chilly air smelled of burning wood and the ocean. Angie stopped at the corner, where women from the local Soroptimists Club were giving away cups of hot cocoa. Would you like marshmallows? The woman asked brightly, her breath a feathery white plume. Angie smiled.
Sure.
Angie cupped her hands around the styrofoam cup. Warmth seeped into her fingers. Steam wafted toward her face. She led Lauren into the town square. They sat on a concrete bench. Even from this distance, you could hear the ocean. It was the heartbeat of the town, steady and even. She glanced sideways at Lauren, who was staring gloomily into the cup.
You can talk to me, Lauren. I know I'm a grown-up and therefore the enemy, but sometimes life throws you a curveball. It can help to talk to someone about your troubles.
Troubles. Lauren repeated the word, made it sound small somehow. But that was part of the teen years, Angie knew. Everything seemed big.
Come on, Lauren, Angie urged. Let me help you.
At last, Lauren turned to her. It's about David.
Of course it was. At 17, almost everything was about a boy. If he didn't call often enough, it could break your heart. If he talked to Melissa Sue at lunch, it could make you cry for hours.
Angie waited. If she had spoken, it would have been to tell Lauren that she was young and that someday David would be a fond memory of first love, not what a teenager wanted to hear. Finally, Lauren said, How do you tell someone bad news? If you love them, I mean.
The important thing is that you're honest. Always.
I learned that the hard way. I tried to spare my husband's feelings by lying to him. It ruined us.
She looked at Lauren.
It's college, right? Angie softened her voice. hoping it would take the sting out of her next words. "You're afraid you and David will be separated, but you haven't even heard back from the schools yet. You need all the facts before you react." Overhead, the moon came out from behind a bank of clouds. The silvery light fell across Lauren's face, making her look older suddenly, wiser. Her plump cheeks were planed by shadow. Her eyes seemed impossibly dark and full of secrets.
"College," she said dully.
"Lauren, are you okay?"
Lauren looked away quickly, as if to hide tears. "Yes, that's it. I'm afraid we'll be separated."
The word seemed almost too much for her. Angie reached out, placed a hand on Lauren's shoulder. She noticed that the girl was trembling, and she didn't believe it was from the cold.
"That's perfectly normal, Lauren. When I was a senior, I was in love with Tommy.
Lauren jumped up suddenly, pushed Angie's hand away. Moonlight traced the tear tracks on her cheeks.
"I gotta go."
"Wait, at least let me drive you home."
"No."
Lauren was crying now, and not trying to hide it.
"Thanks for the pep talk, but I need to get home now. I'll be at work tomorrow night. Don't worry."
With that, Lauren ran into the night. Angie stood there, listening to the girl's footsteps until they faded away. She'd done something wrong tonight, either by commission or omission, she wasn't sure which. All she knew was that it had gone badly from the start. Whatever Angie had said, it was wrong.
"Maybe it's a good thing I never had kids," she said aloud.
Then she remembered her own teen years. She and Mama had engaged in daily knockdown, drag-out fights about everything from skirt length to heel height. Nothing Mama had said had ever been right. Certainly her advice about sex, love, and drugs had fallen on deaf ears. Maybe that had been Angie's mistake. She'd wanted so much to solve Lauren's problem, but perhaps that wasn't what the teenager wanted from her. Next time, Angie vowed, she would just listen. Chapter 16. Date night was a huge success. It seemed that many of the Westenders, young and old, had been looking for an excuse to go out for dinner and a movie. The weather had probably helped. This had been a gray and dismal November, and with Thanksgiving just around the corner, it didn't look like it would improve much. There wasn't much to do in a town like this on a cold and rainy night. Angie moved from table to table, talking to their guests, making sure that Rosa and the new waitress, Carla, were getting the job done. She refilled water, delivered bread, and bussed many of the tables herself. Mama's specials had been especially good tonight. They'd run out of the risotto with mussels and saffron by 8, and it looked like the salmon over angel hair pasta with roasted tomatoes and artichoke heart aioli wouldn't last another hour. It was surprising how good this success felt. Angie had given that some thought lately. Ever since she'd seen Conlon, in fact. After all, she had a lot of time to think. A single woman in a small town with no children and no romantic prospects had plenty of thinking time. Once she began to contemplate her life, she couldn't seem to stop. She thought about the choice she'd made so long ago, before she'd even been old enough to understand what truly mattered. At 16, she'd decided to be someone. Perhaps because she'd grown up in a big family in a small town, or maybe because her father's adoration and respect meant so much to her. Even now, she wasn't sure what had shaped her choices. She knew only that she'd longed for a different, faster, more sophisticated life. UCLA had been the beginning. No one else in her high school class had gone to college so far away. Once there, she'd studied things that set her even further apart from her high school friends and her family. Russian literature, art history, Eastern religions, philosophy. All of that learning had made her aware of the bigness of the world. She'd wanted to seize it all, experience it. And once you strapped yourself into a race car and roared onto the fast track, you forgot to slow down and see the scenery. Everything was a blur except the finish line. Then she'd met Conlon. She'd loved him so much, enough to vow before God that she'd love no other man in this lifetime. She wasn't sure when it had started to be too little, that love, when exactly she'd started to judge her life by what it lacked, but that had been the end result. It was ironic, really. Love had set them in search of a child, and that search had depleted their ability to stay in love. If only loss had brought them together instead of pulling them apart. If only they'd been stronger. These were the things she should have said to him at the theater. Instead, she'd acted like a silly teenager with an unreciprocated crush on the quarterback. She poured herself a glass of wine and sat down by the fire. It was quiet in the restaurant now that everyone had gone. She saw no reason to go home. Here, she was comfortable. There, it was too easy to go down the dark road of feeling alone. Alone. She took a sip of wine, told herself the shiver she'd just felt had been caused by the fire's heat. The kitchen door swung open. Mira walked into the dining room, looking tired. "I thought you'd gone home," Angie said, pushing a chair toward her sister. "I walked Mama out to her car. While we were standing in the rain, she decided to tell me that my teenage daughter is dressing like a hooker." She sank into the chair. "I'll take a glass of that wine." Angie poured a glass, handed it to her sister. "All teenagers dress like that these days." "That's what I told Mama. Her answer was, 'You better tell Sarah that she is advertising a product she is too young to sell. Oh, and that Papa would be spinning in his grave.'" "Ah, the big guns." Mira smiled tiredly, sipped her wine. "You don't look too happy either." "I saw Conlon when I was in Seattle."
"No way!" Mira set down her glass. "I can't believe Mama didn't tell me. I heard every excruciating detail about the play."
"I didn't tell her. Are you kidding?" She sighed. "I'm in trouble, Mira." Mira smiled gently. "You've been in trouble since the day you two split up. Everybody knows that except you."
"I miss him," Angie admitted quietly.
"So what are you going to do?"
"Do?
To get him back."
Just the sound of it hurt.
"That train has left the station, Mira. It's too late."
"It's never too late until you're dead. Remember Kent John? When he dumped you, you waged a campaign that was for the record books."
Angie laughed. It was true. The poor guy hadn't stood a chance. She'd gone after him like a cold wind. "I was 15 years old.
"Yeah, now you're 38. Conlon's worth more than some high school jock. If you love him..."
Like any good fisherman, and everyone in West End knew how to fish, Mira let the bait dangle.
"He doesn't love me anymore," Angie said quickly.
Mira looked at her.
"Are you sure?"
In her whole life, this was the first time Lauren had ever skipped a whole day of school. But Angie had been right. Lauren needed facts, not just fear. She sat stiffly in her window seat on a Greyhound bus, watching the landscape change. When she'd paid her fare and climbed aboard, it had been dark outside, pre-dawn. Light was just creeping over the hills when the bus drove through Fircrest. There, it made several stops. At each one, she tensed up, praying that no one she knew got on. Thankfully, she was safe. She closed her eyes finally, not wanting to watch the passing of miles. Each one took her closer to her destination.
"You know what makes a girl throw up for no reason, don't you?"
"I'm not," Lauren whispered, praying that it was true. "Those cheapo at-home pregnancy tests were wrong all the time. Everyone knew that." She couldn't be pregnant. It didn't matter what the little strip had shown.
"Seventh and Gallon," the driver called out as the bus rattled to a stop.
Lauren grabbed her backpack and hurried off. The cold hit her face. Damp, freezing air wrapped around her made her draw in a sharp breath. Unlike at home, where the air smelled of pine trees and greenery and the salty tang of the sea, here it smelled city-like,
of car exhaust and trapped air. She flipped her collar up to protect her face and checked her directions, then walked the 2 blocks to Chester Street. There it was, a squat, unadorned concrete block building with a flat roof. Planned Parenthood. What a joke. When you broke it down, she had no business being here at all. It should be called unplanned non-parenthood. She let out a deep breath, realizing a second too late that she'd started to cry. Stop it. You're not pregnant. You're just making sure. She walked briskly up the flagstone path to the building's front door. Without daring to pause, she opened the door and entered the waiting room. First, she saw the women and the girls who had arrived before her. Not one of them looked pleased to be there. There were no men. Next, she saw the dullness of it. Gray walls, gray plastic chairs, industrial gray carpeting. Lauren strode up to the front desk, where a receptionist smiled up at her. "May I help you?" the woman asked, pulling a pen out of her bouffant hairdo. She leaned closer and whispered, "Rebido, I called about seeing a doctor." The woman consulted paperwork. "Oh, yes, pregnancy test." Lauren flinched. The woman had practically screamed the word pregnancy. "Yes, that's right. Take a seat." Lauren carefully avoided eye contact with anyone as she hurried to a chair and sat down. She bowed her head, let her hair fall across her face, and stared down at the backpack in her lap. An endless wait later, a woman came into the waiting room and called out Lauren's name. She popped up and hurried forward. "I'm Lauren." "Come with me," the woman said. "I'm Judy." They went into a small examining room. Judy directed Lauren to sit on the paper-covered exam table, then sat in a chair opposite her, clipboard in hand. "So, Lauren," Judy said, "you want a pregnancy test?"
"I'm sure I don't need it, but," she tried to smile, "better safe than sorry."
Her smile faded. She waited for Judy to point out that if Lauren had been safe more, she wouldn't be worrying about being sorry now. "Are you sexually active?" She felt small and much too young to be here, answering these adult questions.
"Yes."
"Do you practice safe sex?"
"Yes, absolutely. I was with David for 2 years before I let him, you know, and we've only done it without a condom once."
Judy's face was filled with a sad understanding. "It only takes once, Lauren."
"I know."
Now she felt miserable and stupid as well as small.
"The thing is, that one time was in the first week in October. I remember because it was after the Longview game, and my period that month was right on time."
"So why are you here today?"
"My period this month is late, and..."
She couldn't say it out loud.
"And?" "I did one of those in-home pregnancy tests. It showed positive, but they're wrong all the time, right?"
"They can be wrong, certainly."
"How heavy was last month's period?"
"Hardly noticeable, but it was there."
Judy looked at her.
"Did you know that spotting can occur while you're pregnant? Sometimes it can seem like a period."
Lauren felt a chill move through her.
"Oh.
Well, let's get you tested and see where we stand." Lauren shut the apartment door behind her. Tossing her backpack onto the sofa, she headed down the hallway toward her mother's room. All the way home, she'd been trying to figure what to say. Now that she was here, in their apartment that smelled of stale smoke, standing by her mother's halfway opened bedroom door, she was nowhere near an answer. She was about to knock when she heard voices. Perfect. He was here again.
"You remember the night we met?" he said in a gravelly, time-worn voice.
All of Mom's boyfriends sounded like that, as if they'd been smoking unfiltered cigarettes since boyhood. Still, it was a romantic question, surprisingly so. Lauren found herself leaning forward, straining to hear her mother's answer through the opening.
"Of course," Mom said, obviously clicking her lighter, lighting a smoke. How could I forget? I told you I was in town for a few weeks. It's been a month.
Oh. There was a surprising vulnerability in her mother's voice.
I knew that.
Fun while it lasted, and all that.
Don't, he said softly.
Lauren leaned closer.
Don't what? Mom said. I'm no catch, Billy. I've done some bad shit in my life. I've hurt people, especially the three women who've married me. You think I'm Mother Teresa?
Lauren heard him cross the room. The mattress pinged beneath his weight. The headboard thumped against the wall.
You'd be stupid to come with me when I leave town, he said.
Lauren gasped, heard her mother do the same.
Are you asking me to come with you?
Mom asked.
I guess I am. Lauren graduates in June. If you could... I ain't the waiting type, Billy.
There was a long pause. Then her mother said,
It's too bad, Jake. Maybe we could have, I don't know, made something.
Yeah,
he said.
Bad timing.
Lauren heard him get to his feet and walk toward the door. She stumbled back into the living room, trying to look as if she'd just gotten home. Jake came hurrying out of the bedroom. When he saw Lauren, he stopped, smiled. It was the first time Lauren had actually seen him. He was tall, maybe 6'3", with long blonde hair. He was dressed in biker clothes, worn black leather pants, heavy black boots, and a concho-encrusted black leather coat. His face reminded her of the craggy mountains in the National Forest, rough and harsh. There was no softness in his face. It was all sharp angles and deep hollows. At his throat, a multicolored tattoo coiled up from the skin beneath his collar. It was a tail. Dragon or snake, probably. If trouble had a face, this was it.
Hey, kid, he said, nodding,
already moving past her. She watched him leave the apartment, then looked back at Mom's bedroom. She took a few steps toward the door. Then paused. Maybe this wasn't a good time. The bedroom door cracked open. Mom came stumbling out of the room, swearing as she brushed past Lauren.
Where are my damn cigarettes?
On the coffee table.
Thanks. Man, I feel like shit. Too much partying last night.
Mom looked down at a pile of pizza boxes on the counter, smiling when she found her cigarettes.
You're home early? What gives?
I'm pregnant. Mom looked up sharply. The cigarette dangled in her mouth, unlit.
Tell me you're kidding.
Lauren moved closer. She couldn't help herself. No matter how often she'd been disappointed in the past, she always believed, or hoped, that this time would be different. And right now she longed to be held and comforted, to be told it's okay, honey, even though she knew it would be a lie. I'm pregnant. She said, softer this time. Mom slapped her across the face, hard. They both looked stunned by the suddenness of the movement. Lauren gasped. Her cheeks stung like hell, but it was Mom who had tears in her eyes. Don't cry, Lauren said. Please! Mom stood there, staring at her, that cigarette still dangling from her mouth. In her pink low-rise pants and cropped white shirt, she should have looked like a teenager. Instead, she looked like an old, disappointed woman.
Didn't you learn anything from me?
She leaned back against the rough stucco wall. Lauren went to stand beside her. Their shoulders touched, but neither one reached for the other. Lauren stared dully at the messy kitchen, trying to remember what she'd even hoped her mother would say. I need your help.
Doing what?
All her life, Lauren had felt alone in her mother's presence, but never more than now.
I don't know.
Mom turned to her. The sadness in her makeup-smeared eyes was worse than the slap.
Get rid of it, she said tiredly. Don't let one mistake ruin everything for you.
Was that all I ever was? Just your mistake?
Look at me. Is this the life you want?
Lauren swallowed hard, wiped her eyes. It's a baby, not nothing. What if I wanted to keep it? Would you help me?
No.
No? Just like that? No? At last her mother touched her. It was sad and soft and hardly lasted any time at all.
I paid for my mistake. I'm not paying for yours. Trust me on this. Have an abortion. Give yourself a chance in life.
Are you sure? The question had kept Angie wide awake last night. Damn you, Mira, she muttered.
What was that? Mama said, coming up behind her.
They were in the kitchen now, making pies for Thanksgiving.
Nothing, Mama. You have been muttering since you got here. I think you have something to say. Put those pecans on neatly, Angela. No one wants to eat a pie that's a mess.
I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Angie tossed the bag of pecans on the counter and went outside. On the deck, there was dew everywhere, clinging to the rails and floorboards. The lawn was as thick and soft as a layer of Christmas velvet. She heard the sliding door open. Close. Mama came up beside her, stood at her side, looking down at the bare rose garden.
You weren't talking about the pecans.
Angie rubbed her eyes and sighed.
I saw Conlon in Seattle.
It's about time, you tell me.
Mira blabbed, huh?
Shared is the word I would use. She was worried about you, as I am.
Angie put her hands on the cold wooden railing and leaned forward. For a second, she thought she heard the ocean in the distance. Then she realized that it was a jet flying overhead. She sighed, wanting to ask her mother how she'd gotten to this place in her life, a 38-year-old single, childless woman. But she knew. She'd let love slip through her fingers.
I feel lost.
So, what will you do now?
I don't know. Mira asked me the same thing.
She has brilliance in her genes, that girl. And?
Maybe I'll call him, she said, allowing herself to think it for the first time.
That would work. Of course, if it were me, I'd want to look in his eyes. Only then can you know.
He could just walk away. Mama looked stunned.
You hear this, Papa? Your Angela is being a coward. This is not the child I know.
I've taken some hits in the past few years, Mama. She tried to smile. I'm not as strong as I used to be.
That's not true. The old Angela was broken by her losses. This new daughter of mine isn't afraid.
Angela turned, looked into her mother's deep, dark eyes. The whole of her life was reflected back at her. She smelled Mama's Aquanet hairspray and taboo perfume. It was comforting, suddenly, to be standing here on this deck, above this yard, with this woman. It reminded her that however much life changed, a part of it stayed the same. Family. It was ironic. She'd run all the way to California to put distance between her and her family. She should have known that such a thing was impossible. This family was in her blood and her bones. They were with her always, even her papa who'd gone away, and yet would always be on this deck on a cold autumn morning.
I'm glad I came home, Mama. I didn't even know how much I missed you all.
Mama smiled.
We knew. Now, get those pies in the oven. We have a lot more baking to do.
Chapter 17. The waistband of Lauren's school uniform was as loose as usual. Still, it didn't fit somehow. She looked at herself in the mirror and tried to tell herself that no one could tell. She felt like Hester Prynne, only the letter was a scarlet P on her stomach. She washed and dried her hands and left the bathroom. Classes were just getting out for the day. Students rushed past her in laughing, chattering pods of red and black plaid.
On the last school day before a holiday, it was always this loud. She lost track of how many kids called out to her. It seemed impossible they couldn't see how different she was now, how separate.
"Lo!" David called out to her, loping forward, his backpack dragging on the ground beside him. He dropped it when he reached her, pulled her into his arms for a hug. She clung to him. When she finally drew back, she was trembling.
"Where were you?" he asked, nuzzling her throat.
"Can we go somewhere to talk?"
"You heard, didn't you? Damn it, I told everyone I wanted to surprise you." She looked up at him, noticing suddenly how bright his eyes were, how broad his smile. He looked ready to start laughing at any moment.
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"Really?" If possible, his smile grew. He grabbed her hand and pulled her along behind him. They ran past the cafeteria and the library, then ducked into a shadowy alcove near the music room. The marching band was practicing. The staccato notes of Tequila stuttered onto the cold afternoon air. He kissed her hard, then drew back, grinning. "Here." She stared down at the letter in his hand. It had been ripped open. The upper edge was tattered. She took it from him and saw the return address. Stanford University. She barely breathed as she withdrew the letter and read the first line. "Dear Mr. Ryerson Haynes, we are pleased to offer you a place of admission." Tears made it impossible to read the rest.
"Isn't it great?" he said, taking the letter from her. "Early decision rocks!"
"It's so early. No one else knows yet."
"I guess I'm just lucky."
Lucky, she thought. Yeah.
"Wow," she said, unable to look at him. There was no way she could tell him now. "This is the beginning, Lauren. You'll get into USC or Berkeley, and we'll be on our way. We'll be together every weekend and holidays."
She finally looked up at him. It felt as if miles separated them now, a distance as big as an ocean. Different colleges hardly seemed to matter.
"You're leaving tonight, aren't you?"
Even to her own ears, her voice sounded dull, wooden.
"Thanksgiving at Uncle Frederick's."
He pulled her into his arms and held her tightly, whispering,
"It's only through the weekend. Then we can celebrate."
She wanted to be happy for him. Stanford. It was what he'd dreamed of.
"I'm proud of you, David."
"I love you, Lauren." It was true. He loved her. And not in that silly high school, "I just want to get laid" way either. Yesterday, that would have been enough. Today, she saw things differently. It was easy to love someone when life was uncomplicated. Last week, Lauren's biggest fear, and it had seemed incredible Hulk big, had been not getting into Stanford. Today, that was the least of her worries. Soon, she would have to tell David about the baby, and from that moment on, nothing would be easy, love least of all. Somehow, Lauren made it through her Wednesday shift at the restaurant. Truthfully, she wasn't sure how she did it. Her mind was crammed so full it didn't seem possible that she could remember a single order, let alone dozens.
"Lauren."
She turned, found Angie standing there, smiling at her with a worried look in her eyes.
"We want you and your mother to come for Thanksgiving dinner."
"Oh." Lauren hoped her longing didn't show. Angie moved closer.
"Come on, Lauren. We'd like you to be there."
All her life she'd waited for an invitation like this. She couldn't seem to say no.
"My mom isn't one for parties."
"Unless you're offering gin and pot," she thought. "If she's busy, come by yourself. Just think about it, please."
"Everyone will get to Mama's around 1 o'clock. Angie handed Lauren a slip of paper. "Here's the address. It would mean a lot to us if you were there. You work at DeSaria's. That makes you family."
On Thanksgiving, when Lauren woke up, her very first thought was, "You work at DeSaria's. That makes you family." For once, she had somewhere to go on this holiday.
But how could she go there now? Ruined and stupid.
Angie would take one look at her and know. Lauren had been dreading that moment from the second she found out she was pregnant. She was still pacing the apartment at 11 when the phone rang. She answered on the first ring.
Hello?
Lauren? It's Angie.
Oh, hi.
I wondered if you needed a ride today. It looks like it might rain, and I know that your mom's car isn't running.
Lauren sighed. It was a sound of pure longing. No, thanks.
You'll be here at 1 o'clock, right?
The question was asked so softly, Lauren couldn't say no. She wanted it too much. Sure, 1 o'clock.
When she hung up, she went to her mom's room and stood by the door, listening. It was quiet. Finally, she knocked.
Mom?
There was the pinging of bed springs, then footsteps. The door opened. Mom stood there, bleary-eyed and ashen-skinned, wearing a knee-length t-shirt that advertised a tavern. The slogan was, "Alcoholics serving alcoholics for 89 years.
Yeah?
It's Thanksgiving, remember? We're invited to dinner? Mom reached sideways for a pack of smokes, lit one up.
Oh, yeah. Your boss.
I thought you weren't sure.
I'd like to go.
Mom glanced back behind her, at the man in the bed, no doubt.
I think I'll hang around here.
But
you go. Have a good time. I'm not one for big to-dos anyway. You know that.
They invited both of us. It'll be embarrassing to show up alone. Mom exhaled smoke and smiled.
No more embarrassing than showing up with me.
She looked pointedly at Lauren's stomach.
Besides, you're not alone anymore.
The door closed. Lauren walked back to her bedroom. By 12:15, she'd pulled out 3 outfits and changed her mind on each one. The truth was, she was thankful for the distraction of clothes. It kept her mind occupied, gave her something to think about beside the pregnancy. Finally, she ran out of time and wore the outfit she had on, a flowing Indian print gauze skirt, a white t-shirt with black laces at the neckline, and the coat Angie had given her. She straightened her hair and brushed it back into a ponytail, then dabbed a tiny amount of makeup, just enough to give her pale cheeks and even paler eyelashes some color. She caught the 12:45 crosstown bus. She was the only passenger on this Thanksgiving day. There was something sad in it, she supposed. The very portrait of a human being without family. Then, again, it meant she had somewhere to go. Better than the people who sat home alone today, eating dinners from tinfoil trays and watching movies that made you ache for what you didn't have. All the holiday specials were like that. The movies, the parades, they all showed families coming together, enjoying the day, enjoying each other. Mothers holding babies. Lauren sighed heavily. It was always right there, buoyant as a cork, ready to pop to the surface of her thoughts. Not today, she said aloud. Why not talk to herself? There was no one here to laugh about it and scoot nervously sideways. This would be her first ever family Thanksgiving. She'd waited a lifetime for it. She refused to let the baby ruin it for her. At the corner of Maple Drive and Sentinel, she exited the bus. Outside, the sky was lead-pipe gray. It looked more like evening than midday. Winds scraped along the ground, swirling up blackened leaves and shaking the bare trees. It wasn't raining yet, but it soon would be. A storm was coming. She buttoned her coat against the cold and hurried down the street, reading house numbers along the way, although she hadn't needed to. When she came to the DeSaria house, she knew it instantly. The yard was perfectly trimmed and cared for. Purple, cabbage-like flowers bloomed along the walkway, created a stream of color against the winter-dead ground. The house was a beautiful Tudor-style home with leaded glass windows and a slanting shake roof and an arching brick entrance. A statue of Jesus stood by the door, his hands outstretched in greeting. She walked down the cement path, past a fountain of the Virgin